This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 6, Episode 18, the 68 Comeback Special. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Elvis is back, so we have a comeback special where we also talk about coming back from more cricket-related problems like losing games or even coming back from a really good victory and keeping it going. We also have a very interesting philosophical question about if you could only ever coach one player from Brendan. So have a listen to that on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to coaching better cricket or to playing better cricket, no matter who you are and no matter where you are in the world. My name is David Hinchliffe. My official title is Director of Coaching at Pitch Vision Academy, but what that means to you is that I look after things here, and helping me along the way are two cricket coaches, the first of which is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garras.
Hello from a rainy Millfield.
That's never a good sign. It's dry here, that's the good news. It's first for about 3 days where we've had no rain, but so far so good.
Yeah, it's coming down straight at the moment. I'm not sure that our games this afternoon are going to get too deep into the overs.
Oh dear, okay, well, we'll wait with bated breath on that one. You can update us next week, perhaps. Let's get a weather update from somewhere else in the world. It's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Showery with sunny intervals is all I can offer.
That's hedging your bets.
Yeah, we've just had a bit of a downpour and it's just brightening up again, but there's more coming in. It is inconsistent at the moment down in Portsmouth, but it's not too cold. It's all right. I don't think we'll get our games on this afternoon, though.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, there's always the weekend, isn't there?
There is.
Speaking of weekends, my new club started their first league campaign at the weekend, and it was a mixed bag, to say the best. The first team were bowled out for 109 and got tonked, and the second team bowled the opposition out for 76 and tonked them. So that's as a coach, you kind of on the one hand you're saying, well done to the second team, and on the other hand you say, right, what are we going to do with regards to the first team? So when you have a side who have a bad start and everyone's saying, well, we've done all this hard work, and then as soon as we get into competitive games, everything seems to fall apart, how do you motivate those guys to come back next week with the same stiff-jawed determination that they had the week before and they got stuffed?
Well, I don't think your determination would change, especially at this early part of the season, and you know, the fact of life is that you win some games and you lose some games. But I think that the constant that I've seen, both when bouncing back from defeat and also when trying to maintain success, it is the validity and the credibility behind having a proper review process. And I'm sure that's something that you've got lined up for the interim period with both of those sides, David. And you know, there's never a game of cricket, or rarely a game of cricket, where you don't get anything out of, irrespective of the outcome. And equally, it's really important when you're doing well to remember why you're doing well. So I think one of the big changes that we've had here at school this year, particularly in our younger age groups, our under-14s and under-15s, has been the way that the players have reviewed their performance, which have been mostly winning, but we have had a couple of losses along the way. But the strength of their review has really helped to maintain confidence, to maintain motivation, and to keep learning and keep progressing. And I'm sure that's what you're trying to put in place up with your club.
Yeah, it's when you take a step back and you review, it takes a lot of the emotion out of that initial defeat. I mean, when you're sitting around in the changing room afterwards and you're thinking to yourself, well, that was not what we had hoped was going to happen, then there's a lot of emotion in there and a lot of feeling that it's all going terribly wrong. But when you can step back and review, that's a really helpful thing to take away the emotional side of it and look more at the, you know, what you did, what you did well and what didn't do quite so well and what you can take to the next training session. What about you, Lavers? How do you approach both a crushing defeat and a glorious victory?
I think in equal measure, really. We're trying to be as honest as possible in an appraisal. I think we'd personally, just commenting on your position, I wouldn't imagine at any stage your expectation, although your hope may have been, but your expectation was probably never to win every game in the season or every game for the rest of your life. It's not going to happen. So it's disappointing when you lose a game, but it's expected that it will happen at some stage. Again, Gareth has talked about how you review. That's going to be slightly different depending on what exposure you've got to the players and how much time you can spend with them. But if you can maximise that and use that, again, to your advantage, and people always talk about taking positives, but I think it's really key that you do identify things you've done well and identify your opportunities where you can go and make further improvements. So as long as there's a bit of clarity in that, and from the game, from the result, people have an idea of the successes that they want to hang on to and the opportunities or areas they've got to expand their game, then it leaves them in a pretty good area.
It's about, for me, you know, performance is something that happens every game, isn't it? Whether you win or whether you don't. And so performance happens every game and behaviours happen every game. And really, when we review, and I'm sure it's the same for you two guys as well, rather than getting too caught up on the outcomes, it's all about trying to work on the performance and the behaviours. Because if you get those right, then you're going to win more often than not. But they're the two constants that happen in every game. The outcome in terms of wins, loss or draws do vary.
Now, I have a little bit of a follow-up question regarding reviewing, and that is certainly in a club situation, it is quite difficult to keep people together outside of the confines of the game. People drift off early, you know, very early, and then sometimes you don't see them until the next week if they can't get to training. And then other people, you might see them, you know, there's a couple of people in the team that I've already seen four times since we lost, and then a couple of guys who I probably won't see until Saturday. So how do you most effectively structure that review in terms of when you do it and how many people you do it with and where you do it?
I think Sam's probably in a better position from a club perspective, because obviously he works alongside a club down at Burridge, doing a great job down there. But for me, a review would be initially with your key people, and you would hope that your key stakeholders, maybe a management group or senior players or whatever, would be the ones that maybe do turn up to a practice within the week, and then you can have that review, and then you can disseminate that information that comes from that review out to the guys that aren't able to get there through, you know, their work commitments or family commitments or all the things that prevent them to get into practice. I think in the days now where we have social networking, we have technology, to get those information, bits of information around, isn't too difficult. And I suppose something like this show, where three of us sit in different locations around the world on a regular basis and yet collate our thoughts together and then disseminate that out through technology, is a good example of how that could happen.
I think having channels of communication is vital, because as you said, you can't just go to work and see your cricketer. It doesn't happen when you're working with a club side or you're working with a school side. A lot of the time, you can't always see the people that you want to see every day. So having as many channels of communication that work one-to-one, so you can speak to individuals, and also work as a group, so you're able to communicate to the whole group at a time with a single bit of information, is useful. But it's got to work for you. It's got to work for the individuals. And you may have a particular group who are extremely into the technology side of things, and they really embrace these kind of communications you can have through apps, or you can have through Dropbox or online presentations that you might get as a result of an analysis you've done or things like that. And you might get people that actually don't work that way. So again, it's adapting to individuals, but there are so many different methods of communication out there at the moment and different channels you can reach people on. I don't think there's a big excuse for saying we didn't have time to review. There's always a way of doing it. It's just finding the way that is going to suit you and is going to suit the person you're trying to communicate with.
We've got a good one at the moment running in our junior squads where one of the leadership group in each of the squads takes it upon themselves to manage a little WhatsApp group of all of the guys. So when we've done a review and done it on a whiteboard, then the person will take a picture of the review, and if a reminder to the guys that were there, or a bit of a tick off to the guys that weren't there because they had other things going on in their lives, he can send out that to the WhatsApp group, and at least it gets things going through people's minds that were absent from that session. So, and we've given that very much to the kids. It was their idea that came up with that, which is obviously brilliant. And they've taken it upon themselves to do it, and it's worked really nicely so far.
I think as a club, in terms of trying to keep the club one club as well, a WhatsApp groups are fantastic. We've got, I think we've got about 7 running at Burridge, which are for the various teams. So first team through to the full team, then the ladies team. They've all got their own WhatsApp group. There's a whole club WhatsApp group. Then there's a selection committee WhatsApp group for last minute adjustments where you can't get everyone together at the same time, but you can send a message and it hits the selection committee at the same time. Everyone approves it in seconds. It's great. It's easy to do. That's a very, very simple thing, which is extremely effective, as long as people have access to it, obviously.
And a top secret tip as well, the new Pitch Vision app, which is coming out soon.
No.
Is going to feature an ability to tie that kind of thing into performance analysis as well while you're training. So a communication of training sessions as well is going to be an interesting addition to that, as well as talking about what happened in the games. And interestingly, what you said there, Gareth, is good to disseminate that information once you've spoken to people. Of course, what I've found has been happening in this week is that I've been having the same conversation with lots of different people at different times, which is fine. That's my job, to collate all those things together. But I think what we're missing at the moment is a way of the disparate groups to speak to each other, as well as me being sort of the central point and gathering all the opinions and thoughts and ideas together and then putting something coherent together for the next training session and the next match. But yeah, some brilliant ideas there. Thank you very much, fellas. I'll keep you posted on how it goes.
Yeah, please do.
Right, let's wrap up this section with the yes-no round. That's 3 questions that can only be answered yes or no to, no matter how much more the team want to say. I've got the question, so let's fire away. Question 1. The hallmark of expertise is figuring out what information is important.
Yes.
Yes.
Question 2. When you feel pressure, then have a routine that gets you back to thinking clearly.
Yes.
Yes.
Question 3. Winning is the science of being totally prepared.
No.
Time now for the questions section on the show. We open up the mailbag to listeners' questions or readers' questions, and we pick out a couple of those and we answer them, and then we pick a winner, and the winner wins a prize of an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can find out more by going over there. You can send in your questions to coach@pitchvision.com, and that is exactly what an old friend of the show has done, and that's Elvis, who's upgraded his name. We'll come to that in a minute. But the question is, hey guys, it's been a while, but Elvis is back. I've been working on my bowling action, and I can see that my non-bowling arm reaches straight up rather than out towards the batter. I've also had coaches say that my back leg collapses. I'm interested to hear what you guys think I should do to prevent this, and I'm also interested to hear what you think of my bowling and my action overall. Signed, the King, Elvis. Now, I'm hoping that he signed it off as in a tribute to Presley, as we were discussing before the start of the show, rather than pure arrogance of his bowling. But he has sent in a video of his bowling, and we've all had a look at that. So let's get some feedback for Elvis, shall we?
First of all, obviously, you've identified two areas. I'd be asking why have these two areas specifically been identified? Is it something that you've come up with on your own? Is it something that's come from a conversation with someone else? Is it something that you've read about that is a particularly important thing? If we visit his back leg first and we talk about his back leg collapsing, my interpretation of a collapsing back leg is a straightish back leg that then bends more. If you look at his back leg, it doesn't actually collapse particularly because it's never particularly straight. So it is slightly bent at contact. It maybe bends a fraction more, but it doesn't exactly go from straight to very bent. So I wouldn't put a massive focus on that. When we go back to his front arm, which was his other point of conversation, which I'm just looking at right now as we go through his video. One thing I'd say is that he does get up quite high and his extension looks like he pushes upwards, upwards and forwards to a degree, but definitely upwards and then drives down. So I'd suggest trying to push forwards and extend forwards may help that slightly, just to keep that body weight going forwards. And in turn, that may have a positive effect on the slight bit of bend he's getting in his back leg. So purely from a technical point of view, we always talk about how different actions or motions within the body's movement are linked. This may be a case of focusing on two different things. If we actually focus on the push with the front arm first, we may find that changes the action or the movement or the bend of that back leg afterwards.
Yeah, it's coaching from video is one of the most difficult things to do, coaching wise, isn't it? Because you haven't got any context. You've just got some video of a guy watching. And B, whatever you say or do can't be applied because it's already on video. So you can offer some advice, but you don't really know exactly what's going to happen unless you've dealt with that exact situation before. And even then, you know, different people are different, so you're not necessarily going to do it. So coaching off a video is not that easy, is it, Gareth?
It isn't, but I think what we've got again, and it's been a constant thing that's happened when video has been sent in over the last few weeks, David, which I think means that people are listening to how you go about recording video. We've got some great angles here.
Yeah,
which allows us to look at the bowling action in different ways, really. And every time you look at a different angle, you pick up something slightly different or you get a bigger insight into that. And that's so well done on that, Elvis. That's been really useful. Just to pick up on the front arm, I think Sam's made some really good points there. I mean, the benefit of the front arm, if we use the front arm effectively, and I actually quite like the motion of the front arm, although you've identified that it should go towards the batter rather than straight up. The benefit of it going towards the batter rather than straight up and then pulling down in a straight line without bending it like a fast bowler, but pulling it back into your body, is that helps get your body weight forward at point of release. And you'll notice that your hips are just slightly behind yourself as you let go of the ball. So by using that front arm and getting it forward, you'll find that you'll get that, those hips further forward and your release point will be more appropriate. So that'll be good. And then the second thing that you can look at here as well is that back leg bend. And I do see a bit of a back leg bend. My interpretation of what I've seen here is that you've got an angled run-up and that back leg has to bend in order to get you to realign yourself towards your target. And to me, it's an excessive movement that is unnecessary. If you then straighten your bowling line up, you won't have to use your back leg to realign all your forces. Ideally, you want your forces to go in a straight line as best directed at the target as possible. And what I see when the ball is bowled is that you've got good revolutions on the ball because you've got a lovely wrist action, you've got a fantastic bowling arm, which enables the ball to have some good revolutions on it. But because your alignments are slightly out of kilter, you lose that drift in the air, and I would like to see you slightly better aligned at the crease that would come from having a more aligned run-up and approach into it. So come straighter, get that front arm going towards the batter, driving up over the top, and I'm sure that you'll start to get some drift out of the ball as well. So there would be my two things, but some really good stuff going on. I would suggest that one of the biggest strengths that you've got is that you realign yourself a little bit in the crease and then work very hard on your follow through. And I love your follow through. I just think that your follow through, yeah, could be even better if you aligned your approach to the target a bit better. So you're giving yourself a bit of work to do with your delivery to get it back on track. And if you put it all together, I reckon you've got drift, spin and bounce, which will make you a pretty good asset to any captain, mate.
One of the things that I've noticed about straightening up somebody's run-up is if someone's quite locked into their old way of doing it, then they somehow can find a way to put a little kink in at the last minute to try and get the angle correct. Have you seen that? So the run-up starts straight, and then right at the last moment, they just sort of jump across them. Before they jump, they step across themselves and then jump in the angle that they're comfortable jumping at.
Absolutely, and then you've got to work out why they jump in and what causes that jump, because there's always a reason. So the reason for the back leg having a bit of a collapse, which has been picked up by people, is your angle. So if you eradicate that angle and then practice it enough, then your body will reorganise itself and lose that back leg collapse. I wouldn't call it a collapse, I'm a bit like Sam, but it's not helping your bowling action. That's the point here, is that bend is not helping your bowling action, because all that bend is giving you is realignment back to your target. If you don't need to realign back to your target, then you're going to be more efficient, which means that you'll have more going on into the ball, which is what you want to happen when you're bowling leg spin.
Next question is from another regular. It's Brendan. And Brendan has sent us something which is quite interesting, a mental exercise, if you like. And he says, you have one player. He can have one discipline. Which discipline would you choose for him? Batting or bowling or wicket-keeping? And you can only coach him in one way. Coach-led, free play, or any other choice, but it has to be one way. What would you choose?
I would choose keeping and free play.
Nice and straightforward. And what would make you choose those particular ways, Gareth?
Because I used to keep wicket.
Yeah.
You're always involved in the game. I think you can get a game anywhere around the world if you can keep wicket. Whereas that's not always the case when you go batting and bowling. There's always somebody who's looking for a bloke to don the gauntlets and go behind the stump. So, yeah, that would be mine, but I'm a bit biased in that respect. And then the free play thing is, won't be a surprise to many that I want people to develop their skills, not so much from a coach-led. It's great to have a little bit of that alongside the free play, but I'll give you an example. I left a whole boatload of different fielding exercises and stuff out on the field the other day as an experiment, and a number of guys came over and started to play with it, and they actually developed their own drills, which really did some great work for the keepers and the slips, and I really enjoyed watching that. So I'd get them to keep, because catching's great fun, I'd get people to develop through three play as much as possible.
Yeah, it's funny, especially when you're working with the younger kids. If you are, if it's a nice day and you have your session, if it's still nice afterwards, most of the time, what will they go and do? They'll just grab the stumps and a bat and a tennis ball and just go off and carry on playing cricket in a completely unstructured environment again. So when we talk about playing the natural way and all that kind of thing, that's what kids do. And I think that's maybe what older people lose a little bit. And there's nothing wrong with just having a bit of a mess around, is there? So
all the best drills that I've got in my armoury come from players.
From players just playing and coming up with it, oh, that would be quite good, and just developing it from there. Yeah.
And then you sit there and you just look at it and you go, oh, that's interesting. And then if you applied it like that, and then we stick a little bit of structure around it and we take it and we can use it with other players. But I love watching people construct their own stuff, because I think it's, sometimes it goes beyond the boundaries that we've got as coaches in our own heads.
Okay, so Lavis, just to make it a bit more difficult for you, you have the same question, but you can't choose the same option as Gareth.
I can't choose wicket keeping and free play, so I can't choose either of them.
Correct.
I wouldn't have chosen wicket keeping anyway. I would have chosen batting with free play would have been what I would have gone for. Reason being, because I feel if people can If people can learn through their own experiences and their own decisions, then it's a much more powerful tool than just being constantly fed information. And it's something that was mentioned and discussed in an article I wrote last week, which is on Pitch Vision. But I would try to lean that way if I could. Given that I've only got one player, our opportunity for practice is going to be ample. So there's going to be lots of opportunity for him to make mistakes.
Yeah, true.
Get decisions right, get decisions wrong, and learn along the way. So it's not the way we're in a short space of time and you've been thrown a player, you've got an hour with them to net before they have a cup final on the weekend or whatever it is. It's an extreme situation, but or you've got an hour with them once a month or something like that, where you feel like you've really got to feed information to them to make it valuable, and then they can go and use it in their own time. I think when you've got one player, then you've obviously got a lot of time you can spend with them. So yeah, I would go down the free play route as well, but I'd be focusing on batting.
Here you go. I've got an example of this, like a proper example of this. You got one player. His name's Don Bradman. He's got one discipline. His discipline is batting. And which way did he go about it? He went about it with free play. And I think we all know about the golf ball and the corrugated water butt and the stick that or stump that he used to bat. But I think that's probably the classic, isn't it? The classic example of those things all coming together. So, yeah. I'm with the free play thing, and it's nice that Sam's gone for batting and I've gone for keeping, and we just need somebody to come in from the outside and do some bowling stuff.
Yeah, well, I might as well pick a bowler then and try and get him to bowl 95 mile an hour.
Do you think free play is something that's easier to employ in different skills? So is it easy to employ free play in batting or keeping as opposed to bowling, or are they all equal?
I think they're all equal. It's a great question, Sam. They're all equal, I reckon, because I know we talk about Malinga, but that's an example of free play, isn't it? And how he developed his technique and his skills. And you know, when you speak to some of the greats in India about the way that they did it down the years, it all came from that, you know, that free play stuff. It was from playing in the streets and making your own rules up and. You know, playing in different conditions, whether it be in a monsoon season or whether it be in a, you know, when it's, we haven't seen rain for 3 or 4 months. I think a lot of the best players around the world have had significant elements of free play within their programs, and it's something that we can't lose sight of now when we're trying to develop cricketers. I sit here some nights doing admin in the office with the windows open, and we've got 5 artificial nets just outside the window, and one of my favourite things is listening to the year nines, our youngest group of players, creating games for themselves and their own rules, and when you do this you're out, and when you do that you get 5 runs and all of that. I just think that's absolutely brilliant, and I certainly wouldn't go over there and ever stop them or try to impact upon that, because they get enough of the coach-led stuff in their other environments.
Yeah, and it's not to say that the stuff where you're tracking performance and working on technique and doing and having interventions in some way or another is a poor way to do it. The role of the coach is to be able to pick out when is a good time to be able to do that and when is a good time to be able to let somebody play because it's working effectively for them. That is all within the art of coaching. One of the things that started to do more and more coaching this summer, I've realised is that across the board, I am very much a perfectionist. And in many ways, that's good, but also in many ways, that can be quite restrictive, because as I'm going through coaching and coaching different age groups and different types of players and different skill levels of players, what I want to do is try and make sure that what I deliver is absolutely perfect for that group of players in that particular environment. And what I found out is that is an impossible task to achieve. You're never going to achieve perfection in coaching. And so what I'm trying to do and what I'm learning to accept through all this extra coaching I've been doing this summer so far is that you don't have to worry about perfection. You have to worry about delivering a good coaching session and making sure that people get something from it, even if it doesn't go exactly according to the plan that you had at the start of the session. And that is the end of the show for this week. We have one more thing to do before we go, and that is to pick the winner of this week's competition, the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. We had the King Elvis's question about his bowling action, and we had Brendan's question about one player, one discipline, and one type of coaching. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I like Brendan's this week. I mean, the King, it's great to have you back, and good to have you back in the back in the building, obviously. And but for Brendan, outstanding question, because it's never going to happen ever for any of us. But what, you put us under a bit of pressure there, and I quite enjoyed that. So thanks, mate. That's all yours.
Well done, Brendan. It's definitely an interesting mental exercise if it's something that would never really happen. But it's nice to sort of think through that and find out what people's priorities are. Now, Gareth, if someone wanted to send in their question and get it answered by the team and also have the chance to win the prize, what would they need to do?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That is correct. You can also find us on Facebook by going to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. You can tweet us by tweeting @pitchvisionacad, and you can listen to the show every week if you like it. Just go to your favourite podcast app and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy in there. Or if you want to stream the show directly from the Pitch Vision website, you can go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link. And you've got all the details for subscribing in there, and also a nice little button to click on if you want to stream it from the website. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, guys.